Oh, poop. Poop, 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 poop.
This is the seventh episode of 1F Jeff.
The number seven is often considered lucky in many cultures. There are 7 days in a week, seven colors in a rainbow, and seven continents. In mathematics, seven is a prime number. It also appears frequently in religious and mythological contexts, like the seven wonders of the ancient world.
Bing Bong, how are you today?
Hey, Jeff. Bing Bong's here. Bing Bong's doing fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Well, that's just great, Jeff.
I love you, Bing Bong.
Bing Bong loves you too, Jeff.
Today's guest is Matt Farley.
Ngeni wetu waleo ni Matt Farley.
Taman bai vanviras on Matt Farley.
L'ospite di oggi è Matt Farley.
I'm not sure when I first came across Matt Farley's music. It was probably about 5 or 10 years ago when I was searching for songs with the word Jeff on Spotify, like I do. And I stumbled upon a song simply called The Jeff Song. Two Fs, unfortunately. Interestingly, the only song about a 1F Jeff that I'm aware of is actually by Jacques Brel, and it's simply called Jeff, J-E-F.
Oui, Jeff. Oui. Bien, Jeff. Bien, bien, bien.
Anyway, the Jeff song led me to the Jeff Poop song, again, two Fs, and then to the massive library of songs by an artist appropriately titled The Odd Man Who Sings About Poop, Puke, and Pee. I did what anyone in the situation would do, and I started sending my friends their personalized poop songs. Some of them were thrilled, some of them didn't respond, a few were like, what? And then, about a year or two ago, there was an article in the New York Times about the guy behind these songs. And that was when I learned about Matt Farley.
Matt Farley is an American singer, songwriter, and filmmaker, best known for being incredibly prolific. He's released over 26,000 songs under various pseudonyms, covering all sorts of quirky topics. He's also made several independent films and even appeared on The Tonight Show.
Last summer, I took a bike trip to Yellow Springs, Ohio with some friends. We were at a brewery, unwinding after a long day of biking, and I started playing some of my friends their poop songs for them, to differing degrees of amusement. And I mentioned the New York Times profile and how it said his phone number was easy to find on the internet and that he often answers the phone. So one of my friends was like, call him up. So I looked on the internet and I found his phone number pretty easily and I called him and he answered. And I was honestly kind of surprised. So I just said something about how I'm a big fan and how he should make a 1F Jeff poop song because there wasn't one. I tried to keep it short because I didn't want to take up too much of his time. But when I was trying to wrap up the call, he started asking me questions, like about the bike trip, about my friends. And then at one point he says, it's funny that you can't get me off the phone now, isn't it? It was funny. I ended up talking to him for like 15 minutes. I ended up passing the phone around to all my friends so they could say hi. It was pretty cool. When I got back from the trip, Matt and I texted back and forth a bit. I learned that he's a filmmaker as well, which is a thing that I do. So we shared our work with each other, which was fun. And then about a year later, I was working on getting this podcast off the ground and I was trying to think of guests I'd like to have on. And Matt's name immediately popped into my head. I didn't expect he'd do it, to be honest, but it never hurts to ask. So I sent him a text saying I was starting a podcast and I'd love to have him on. And he immediately responded, absolutely. Let me know when's good. And in that moment, and in the conversation that follows, I learned that Matt Farley is not only a talented and incredibly prolific artist, but he is also a great human being. I think there's a lesson for all of us in Matt's unique perspective on life and creativity and all that. And I hope that you enjoy listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Here's Matt. And you're in Massachusetts, I see.
Correct.
I don't often do this on Zoom, but you're special, Matt.
Thank you.
I have known of you for, 6 or 7 years. And then I heard of you. Then I saw the article of you. My ex-girlfriend actually texted me the article of you in the Times last year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, look at that. And then I was on, I don't know if you remember this, but I was on a biking trip with some friends of mine in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, yeah, I was playing some of your songs, and I mentioned the thing about your phone number being available, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so we called you up, and you answered the phone, and we talked to you for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, I do remember, yeah.
Yeah, and then we were in touch for a while. And then I actually, once you agreed to be on the podcast, I went into your oeuvre, and I've gotten to know a lot more of, I've got some more favorite songs, actually. I know you're far more than the name songs and the poop songs that I was originally familiar with.
It's there if anyone wants to dig. Most people don't, but those who do, some of them are happy when they with their discoveries.
So let's go back. I'm super curious to find out, like, how did this all begin? The whole writing so many songs, putting them all over Spotify, making a living doing it, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it goes way back to when I was a teenager. I just love working on a creative project, whether it was making movies with my friends or recording albums on my own or with friends. I still do feel like I'm kind of wasting my life if I'm not deep in the middle of some exciting creative project. And I ended up meeting my friend Tom Scalzo in college, who was on board with spending entire weekends just recording songs. And we thought we were so great. Nobody wanted to listen to any of our songs, but we thought they were amazing. We rattled off multiple albums while we were in college. Rarely would we make more than a couple copies of each because no one wanted them. But that didn't stop us. And so slowly we developed the philosophy that, like, quantity begets quality, where if we said no to an idea, then it would stifle us, and then we wouldn't know where to go next. And so the answer was, say yes to every idea in front of us, write the song about whatever, whoever just shouts out a random topic, like pickle sandwich. You know, Tom was cutting up pickles and putting them in bread, and I was like, one of us said, like, we should do a song called Pickle Sandwich. And then as soon as he was done eating it, we recorded it, you know? And what we find was, like, as soon as we're done Pickle Sandwich, we got through that one, and then a new idea is going to present itself. And if we're doing 35 songs in a weekend, there's going to be some far out, wacky, weird stuff that people don't like. But a few times throughout the weekend, we just accidentally would write, like, what we considered to be, like, really good, interesting, compelling works. And, you know, we loved all of it, but we're also aware of the fact that, like, people might only like a few of them, but still, it was not a waste of a weekend by any means. So this is back in the late 90s into the early 2000s. And again, no one was listening. We didn't even know what to do with the album. This was before iTunes existed. So, like, I started making, like, CDRs of our albums, and I would literally just hand them to strangers on the sidewalk, you know? I was just so desperate to get somebody to hear what we did, and most of those ended up in the trash. I would look up just addresses of, like, coffee shops or bookstores. I was like, maybe someone in a bookstore has a CD player, and if I mail them a CD, they'll put it in and play it while they're working, you know? And I mean, thousands.
Like, right.
Thousands over the course of years. Like, the post office would be annoyed when they'd see me coming. They're like, oh God, it's this guy again with a stack of little mini CD mailers. So in 2006, at this point, we're like 28 years old. Tom and I came up with the idea of recording 30 minutes of music per day for the entire year. And again, this is at a point where we have no fans. We both have full-time jobs and things to do. But we're like, yes, we should do this. And so it was like a songwriting boot camp, you know, where just every day you just have to record music. And I think it's a good way to learn. It's a good way to just, like, to fight through all the things that kind of block your ability to complete a project if you just, well, I got to do it, you know? And another thing for me is, like, I would tell, no one cared, but I would tell everyone about it. Like, Tom and I are doing an album a day. And I did it because I'm just full of excitement and joy, and that's what I want to talk about. But also, I want to, like, set myself up
I look at those people as like, now I have to do it because I told them. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't want to let them down, even though they don't care and they've immediately forgotten. I'm like, if they ever bring it up, I have to be able to say, yes, I did it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of preamble, but like a lot of people hear my story and they're like, oh, this like cynical guy churned out garbage songs to make money.
That's the way the media seems to like them.
Yeah. And it's like 15 years really of like, of doing this before the concept of anyone even hearing it was like, what was mind blowing, you know? So
right.
Then around 07, 08, we did have song albums on iTunes, and a song like Pickle Sandwich might earn $1.50 in a year.
Right.
And again, most people would look at that and say like, well, it's over. Like we failed. But I looked at it and I was like, oh, I could put out 20,000 songs like that. And if they each made a buck or two, that'd be pretty cool. So basically in 08 is when I started this intense, you know, out of control song releasing.
What were the first songs? Do you remember what the first ones that you...
Yeah. So in 07, I think it was, 07, I tested it out. I did an album about the Red Sox.
Okay.
Because we had done a few songs about athletes, and the Red Sox were big at that point. I live near Boston.
Right.
And I did an album about celebrities because, again, from what I'd done with Tom, we knew that if you mentioned a celebrity in a song title, it might catch someone's attention.
Right. And
so that was just those two in 07. And then I kind of just sat on it and kind of like tested my theory. And a few months in, the theory is proving true. It's like, all right, the songs are earning a little bit of money every month. And so the spring of 08, I did the first Toilet Bowl Cleaners Poop album. And then at that point I was trying to do 25 songs a month, which, in retrospect was so small an amount. And within a few months, I got to the point where I was doing about 100 songs a month, and it's fluctuated since then. Right now I'm at 50 a month.
Did you know that the poop stuff was going to blow up like it did?
I mean, I highly suspected it would. I didn't have... Like another thing people say is like, what kind of like market research do you do?
Right. And
I don't even know how to do market research. Like my market research is, wouldn't it be funny if I did X, Y, or Z, and then I do it. And sometimes it goes over well, sometimes it doesn't, but
sure.
And I think it's evident in the songs that like, I'm having a good time here. It's not cynical. It makes me.
Right.
And if it's ever cynical, it's almost like I'm playing the part of a cynical lounge singer who's given up, which I think is a funny concept.
Well, the media has to have some angle on you, and that's the easiest one to go for. I mean, go with cynicism over joy, right?
Yeah, but it's right. I mean, and also they're going to be like it's a get rich quick scheme.
Right. Like, right.
It's such a slow get middle class slow scheme is what I call it.
So do you remember when you started to, I mean, did you have a full-time job at a certain point and then you just quit that job to do music full time?
Yeah, but I was 17 years. So I graduated college in 2000 and worked 17 years at a group home for teenagers. And the best part was like, I worked from Thursday to Saturday was my work week.
Right.
Then I get Sunday through Wednesday to devote to my music stuff. Also, I found if I worked on weekends, that was good because like if your weekends are your only days to work on your creative projects, then you're constantly being like pulled in so many directions. There's cookouts and birthday parties.
Yeah.
And you want to go, but you also want to pursue your dream, you know, but it's hard to say to somebody, I can't go to your birthday because I have a feeling that if I write a lot of poop songs, it could become my full-time job, you know? But if you say, sorry, it's my shift at work, then everyone understands.
Sure. You can't use the poop song excuse for cookouts. I mean, now you probably could, but...
it's embarrassing to have like a long-term plan
dream to make it as a novelty songwriter. It's humiliating.
I don't think that it should be humiliating at all. I truly admire what you're doing. Like the level of perseverance and the, I watched the documentary that the Australian guy made with you. I think he was.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. But what I liked what you said in it, you said something like, some guy says he wrote a song. It took him a month. Yeah. And it didn't take him a month. No. It took him like 3 hours, maybe 2 hours or whatever. The rest of the time he was stewing over it and thinking about it and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is just like doing the work all the time. And there's no time to really stew about it or think about it because you're just doing it. And I found that to be truly kind of inspirational and revelatory, if you will.
And it's just a song, you know?
Right.
It's like, it's just a song. And
right.
Maybe this one won't be great, but you just pushing through and finishing this one could make the next one great. And then the craziest part is like all the ones that I think are great, nobody loves. And the ones that I don't even remember recording are a lot of people's favorites.
Sure, sure, sure. Although, I mean, I can relate somehow to the being precious with your like creative work. Like, I think that you've pushed through it to a degree that that a lot of people don't. But like for me, when I put out something like this podcast, for example, I just started it, but I've spent tons of time, more time than I should, trying to get these things right. Cause it's like putting myself out into the world in a way, in a vulnerable way. So, but truly I wish I could just spit them out. You know
what
I mean?
But the thing is, I'm just resigned to the fact that I have to endure that feeling, you know, because
right.
We just made a new movie called Evil Puddle. And at the screenings, I definitely have moments where like if the audience isn't laughing at something I think should have been funny.
Yeah.
Like some like time stands still and like the world is crumbling, pushing on your shoulders.
It
never goes away. You just have to decide. Like, well, that's the price you pay for being a creative person. You have to endure that. Or if I play a minute and a half long song for someone and they check their phone while I'm playing it, like,
right,
they
right.
couldn't wait a minute and a half?
People are very patient these days. There's a lot of patience in the world.
People especially don't know what to do when they are face-to-face with an aspiring artist, you know, because they're not frequent. Like, most people don't bump into someone who's devoted to creativity and
sure.
And like most people view, it's like someone far off in Hollywood or New York does music and you don't see them in your daily life. So when you do encounter someone kind of like what I'm doing, they don't know the right way to handle it. And usually it's by just checking their phone.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I think it's also a matter of like location too, because I don't know about your city, but I don't imagine there's a ton of full-time artists in the city that you live in. Same with Columbus, Ohio. So
yeah.
A lot of my friends here don't know how to respond to my artistic stuff. They just don't know what to do with it.
I know, and they don't ask any follow-up questions.
No.
I'm like, I just came out with a movie, and people just say, oh, you know, where...
Yeah,
where if they came to me with a similar thing, I would have so many questions.
Right,
I'd
right,
be
right.
so excited. Yeah, you know?
But I mean, maybe that's because they just don't know the questions to ask, or they're intimidated by it because they feel like they don't understand it enough. So it's even to ask, they might ask a dumb question, or they're thinking they might ask. You know,
I guess so. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So what are some of your favorite songs that you've made?
Well, you know, I have. I call it the no jokes material.
Yeah.
Which is I don't even know, several different bands. Most recently, it's a band called The Big Heist. You know, just, 2 years ago now, we released a project called The 50, and we'd been working on it. We worked on it for a year, where we released 5 albums once per week, each with 10 songs on it. And so it had 50 tracks that we'd been working on. I think it's a really great collection of songs, like a great journey. From the first album to the fifth. And some people, it's cool, we made t-shirts, and so when we do shows, there'll be people in the audience wearing the 50 on their chest, which is incredible, you know. And I'm not aware of that, but I hear songs on the radio and I'm like, okay, we're about as good as that, you know. Like I would love to be in the conversation. We performed on NPR. It came out like 2 months ago on World Cafe.
Well, right on.
Yeah. And that was one of the rare times that the show like treated us like we were a real band, and we played a lot of the No Joke songs, and it was a great feeling. It was,
yeah.
In fact, I offered to do a poop song, and they were like, "No, that's okay." You know,
wow,
yeah.
I mean, come on.
So,
well, it's so, NPR too, so.
Yeah, they're a little too classy for
fecal matter, maybe. Or, yeah.
But so it's like, it's the same thing. Okay, I got a lot to say today. Thanks for listening.
No, I'm glad that you do. Yeah.
Okay, Paul McCartney. This is probably 7 years ago. He came out with an album. He was at the Grammys, okay, performing. And my wife and I were watching it. And he did, I think he did Hey Jude, but he also did a song off the new album, okay? Right. And my wife and I, and the song, I love Sir Paul, but I was like, I don't think it's just that it's new and unfamiliar. I think this is not a great song, Paul.
Right.
But anyway, he still wants to prove himself. At that age, at the Grammys, you know, lifetime achievement, whatever, he didn't just play Hey Jude and, you know, Live and Let Die. He wanted to play the new song from the new album because it had that. And so if Paul is still struggling to convince people that his new stuff is relevant, then that's just another plight of being a creative person. You're never satisfied and you always want to prove yourself. You know, I think that's what gets you any kind of success, because if you're not that vigilant about it, then you're going to probably give up sooner.
Also, the bar seems like it keeps getting higher. You know,
right.
It's always like one bar and then and I'm like, oh, I achieved that. Then the bar just keeps like going up and up and up.
Yeah, I know. Like with the NPR thing, like 3 years ago, performing in a studio at NPR for like a nationwide show would have been like, that's the greatest thing ever. And then we do it and we're like, all right, what's next?
Right. Well, you're on Fallon. I saw too, like 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's not even 10 years ago yet, but even when it's 30 years ago, it's still going to be how I introduce myself to people.
I'll mention it at least in the
Matt Farley, as seen on the Tonight Show.
You should put it on your card or something. Yeah.
Well, they gave me like a gift bag, you know, of goodies, including coasters, leather coasters that say the Tonight Show. So anytime anyone comes over, I make sure
bring out the coasters. Yeah, for sure, bring out the Jimmy Fallon coasters.
Oh, did I leave that out? Yes, I was on the Tonight Show. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was.
Use this coaster for your drink, please. I don't have a drink. Would you like a drink for your coaster? Earlier, you mentioned that. When you tell people you're doing something, when you tell people you're going to make music, that makes you have to make it, right?
Yeah.
Because you've told them. I feel the exact same way. I almost like with this podcast, I started interviewing people before I even started making it, because I was like, well, if I interview enough people, I have to make it, because they're going to expect me to have something to show them, right? And that's actually quite effective as a motivational tool, really, because a lot of people talk about making things all the time,
right?
But then don't actually make the things.
Yeah. You got like, it's funny how much our psychology is to just not even get out of bed. Like default setting is, why would I even get out of bed? You know, and you have to fight all of that and then create a project that no boss is telling you to do and no money is guaranteed as a reward for it too.
Yep.
So it is like, it's moving mountains.
Right. But it feels good.
Oh. Yeah, it feels so great. Because on the flip side is you're in bed feeling guilty, you know? So you just need to have a low guilt endurance, I think, is helpful.
For me, I feel like I'm wasting my life if I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
So when did you go from doing the music part-time to starting like a full-time, being able to make a full-time job out of it?
Yeah, 2017 is when I finally made the jump. I was very slow, like... I didn't want to quit the day job, because quitting the day job and then needing to go back to the day job, that would have been crushing. So it's like, all right, my formula was to have a year's worth of money in the bank that, you know, if things went awry, I'd have that buffer and then be earning twice what I'm earning at the day job, you know?
Right.
Which frankly wasn't, it's like, you know, I was working at like a charity. So like, you know, it was not like, after 17 years, my salary was like $25,000, you know?
Wow. Right.
So So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an absurd amount of money, but you know, time is more important than money. So that's what I loved about that job. It gave me 4 free days a week to work on stuff. But yeah, that was when I made the jump. And so I was at that level through music, but also I got a gig for a year being the singing spokesman for a auto dealership in Minnesota.
Oh yeah, I saw that on the good stuff.
so that helped me. It was like, all right, that's gonna be a nice little boost there too. And so I went for it, and I'm still going strong, but it could all come crumbling down, don't you?
How could it? I feel like you've got enough songs in the bank and on Spotify that have to get consistent plays. Like, how do you imagine it could crumble?
It could crumble. I mean, the music industry has changed greatly, has had many moments in its history where just the way it does things has changed outrageously. So who knows about that? And then, you know, I mean, Spotify, I think currently they don't start paying you until your song has hit 1,000 streams in a year.
Right, right.
So that hasn't hard. I haven't seen a huge problem from that, but it has. I can definitely see I'm earning a little less from Spotify than I used to. And who knows, tastes have changed. I mean, you know that song from like the 1920s where it's like, hello, my baby, hello, my darling.
I learned,
like,
learned a trivia about that recently, actually, about
the word
about
hello.
The song, hello.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, well, people don't sing like that very much anymore. So, I mean, styles could just change completely. So a guy on his keyboard singing might just seem completely unlistenable at some point.
Right, which ties into the cartoon that Hello My Baby song is in, because that's also about, you know, times changing in a way with the frog and the, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But on the flip side, anything could change. The most secure job that you think you have could go away. So it's like, yeah, I'd rather take a dive and try to make something work that I like doing, that I'm excited about.
Right. I don't know how it works, but I imagine you have enough songs on the platforms to basically, do you still have to, I mean, you still are making more content, of course, but like, is there a certain, like, you've got a bank of songs in there that are basically just kind of giving you money?
Yeah. Well, if things stay as they are, I think I would be able to expect like a middle-class income for many years to come, even if I didn't add anything to what I've got out there. But I it feels like it's kind of, I always say, like, what do they say? You know, oh, save the last dance for me. Don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're going to be. Darling, save the last dance for me. Like, you got to be true to the person who you brought to the dance. And in this case, being a diligent songwriter got me to this point. So I shouldn't turn my back on that. I need to. So that's why I'm pretty strict about 50 new novelty songs every month, because it's like, it would just feel wrong. It's like, you know, in Rocky 3, when the success kind of gets to his head and he's not training as well. Sure. And then Clubber Lang knocks him out.
That's a great metaphor. I like that. I love any Rocky 3 metaphor is really just lay on the obscurity there. How do you come up with the ideas? Do you get to a certain point? Because I realized you have albums about just appliances and every single state. And I'm a big fan, by the way, of I Burnt My Toast. That's a classic right there.
Poetry,
I know it's not one of your serious ones, but that is poetry. Yeah. There's a really poetic lyric in there. And
that's beautiful.
And it's really profound. But it's in the context of this kind of, no offense, ridiculous song about burning one's toast.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an experience we've all had.
And going back to that Hello, My Darling song, like, novelty songs are fun. You know, there's no two ways about it, you know?
I mean,
and
weird out, yeah.
And I don't think we should poo-poo something just because it's funny anyway. So even though I try to push my no jokes material, which I'm proud of, I am proud of I Burnt My Toast, even though I don't remember it at all.
You should go back and listen. It's a good one. Yeah.
What a waste of bread. What a waste of time.
Also, I've Been Elected Mayor is a solid track as well, which I like because it's such a very specific. Like, there's not a lot of times you can use that, and I wonder if anybody's been elected mayor and played that the night they got
That's
elected.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Hip, hip, hooray, I've been elected mayor. The citizens of this town decided that I should lead them. I am so happy, I am in charge. I'm gonna make a lot of good things happen. Oh, yes, 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 I am.
But where do I get my ideas? Just anything that crosses my mind. Ooh, I should do that. I write it down. And currently I'm... the name poop song phenomenon has really been successful for me.
Is that the most successful stuff you've got out there, the name poop song?
Currently, yeah. That artist, I have two poop artists. I have the toilet bowl cleaners, and then I have the odd man who sings about poop, puke,
poop
and pee.
Yeah.
And the toilet bowl cleaners were always my number one artist until last fall. And since last fall, the odd man has jumped. Huh. I think right now, odd man's at like 160-something thousand Spotify monthly listeners, which is my best. And when it was at its biggest, he was at 500,000, which is insane. But I have at least 1,200 names that have been texted or emailed to me.
Yeah, I've got one that I've Yeah.
Do you want me to add your name?
Well, actually, what I was going to ask you is if you would make a theme song for my podcast.
Oh,
It's called 1F Jeff because my name is Jeff with 1F.
Oh, well, I'll do a 1F Jeff poop song, but I can't do the theme song, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I used to do for about 5 years. I would do for like $50. I would write a custom song for people.
Right.
But then one day I sent the song to someone and they wrote back with like a list of 10
notes
changes. Yeah. And I was like, I don't need this.
$50.
And I immediately took the page off my website. I was like, I'm no longer doing custom songs.
Right. You don't want to bring 10 pages of notes to it.
I can't handle
it. That's ridiculous. Like $50. Yeah.
$50 for what was a really clever song, too. It's always the ones that you think you did a good job on that the people have the most notes.
What name gets the most plays, do you know? Like,
I think it's the Daddy Poops song.
Oh, Daddy Poops. That makes total sense because kids, yeah. I mean, everybody poops, so it's really, you've hit on a universal theme here.
It's so funny. Yeah. And for Newton, it was the apple fell on his head and he thought of
right,
gravity. I had a similar, there was no feces involved. I didn't get like whacked in the head with a piece of poop, but just had this revelation. I was like, I think people with now that there's search bars on iTunes, I bet you people do. Marley is currently the biggest, most popular
Marley
name.
Wow, it's probably the dog. Maybe it's a dog thing they're doing.
Yeah,
who
knows? And then
I don't know anybody named Marley.
Also in the top 10 is the James poop song.
Right,
and
that checks out. Yeah.
Riley and Jake. Yeah, but that's
Riley's. Yeah,
that's just currently. Who knows?
Shifts with the trending names.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like enough. If enough Rileys just play it nonstop for a weekend, it can,
right.
I mean, daily I'm getting, because my number, as you know, is very easily gotten. So I get texts. I wake up most mornings with a text being like, please do the Jeff with 1F song or something else.
Well, I only did it once or twice, but yeah, there is a Jeff. I know a guy who does really want a Jeff with 1F song. Not even a Jeff with 1F poop song. He just wants a Jeff with 1F song. That would be enough to satisfy his...
Have I done it with 1F for poop or not yet?
You haven't done any 1Fs. Yeah. I feel discriminated against.
To all the 1F actually. Jeffs out there. Okay.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that.
Well, you're on the list, but currently it's about a 2.5 year wait list.
Wow. Wow. Can I grease the wheels a little bit? No. Okay. Just kidding. So how did the film stuff you've done? Have you done the film stuff your whole life as well?
Yeah. Ever since I was like 14, 15, my friends and I got our hands on a video camera, and it was so much fun. We just spent one night making a movie called Killer in the House, and it just, like, we're all laughing through, like, we can't keep a straight face. Everyone's looking at the camera. There's so many errors and problems with the whole thing. But for the next month, every time we were together, we would watch it and just die laughing. And we were just so happy. And again, we'd show it to other friends who weren't there that night. And they didn't appreciate it nearly as much as we did. But, I've been chasing that dragon ever since then. And my movie's very much, embrace that kind of basement, backyard, garage filmmaking
DIY
sensibility, where it's like, we don't tell people to look at the camera while they're delivering their lines, but sometimes they do, and we don't stop them from it either. It's like endearing, sort of, to, you know.
It's part of the aesthetic. Yeah.
When your aunt is your aunt who has no interest in acting is given like a major role in a movie, and she just naturally will look into the camera while she's delivering her line. Like, sure. That's so charming, you know.
Yeah. So how many movies have you made at this point?
I think 15 feature length movies at this point. Yeah. I definitely approach it with the same, just like intensity and feel the whole, like the whole get it perfect is not something we worry about. My friend, Charlie Roxburgh, who I met in college, he directs most of them, and it's really the two of us doing basically everything from writing to shooting to editing.
Did you teach yourself how to do that?
Yeah, I mean, just from the more, you know, just from doing it, really.
Right.
Charlie's better at technical stuff. He actually worked like in the industry doing After Effects and whatnot. So
right.
It's good to have him on my team, because he can do really subtle things to, like, when if there's a microphone that's in the shot, like he knows how to like paint it out.
Right.
Although other times we're like, yeah, just leave it in there, you know, because people feel happy when they see our mistakes sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I get
say,
that.
Let the audience feel like they're smarter than us, you know.
No, that's a smart, yeah. And being done is better than perfect, because there's no such thing as perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get close to perfect, but there's no such thing ultimately as perfect, so.
By the way, I'm counting 17 feature-length movies.
Well done.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, and do you edit them, or does the other guy edit them?
We trade off at this point.
All right.
He used to edit them all, but in 2021, we decided, let's try to make two movies a year for the next 5 years. And I was like, listen, I should edit half of these, because you're gonna die otherwise.
Yeah.
And we just, it's been 5 years now. This is year five. We ended up doing 7. Not bad. You know, we are failures. We didn't do 10 movies. But one thing I always say is, set your goals so high that if you only get 70% of the way there, it's still incredible.
Yeah, love that. How long do you shoot for? Do you just shoot when you can, when you get the people? Is that the
right
kind of thing?
Yeah, like for this particular movie, Evil Puddle, which just came out, we started filming a year ago, and it was one or two Saturdays basically every month from May into the fall. And then we were mostly done, and Charlie spent a lot of the winter time editing. And then when the weather got a little bit better in the spring, we had a few more days. But it's scattered around like that. You know, Charlie has a day job, and I mean, my day job is making music, but also we homeschool our kids, and I'm doing that a lot of the time too.
What do your kids think of your music?
I don't know.
How old are they?
9 and 11.
Okay.
And it's just part of the landscape for them. You know, it's always been that this guy's been in the other room recording music their whole life.
Right.
And they don't think much of it.
do you ever play anything for them just to see, or do you don't?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've obviously heard songs. They've come to some of the shows and whatnot. But I try to, they have to deal with hearing just my voice bleeding through the walls.
Right.
I figure that's enough. But like when we're hanging out, I'm just playing regular, you know, like mainstream music. I'm not
you're not playing your albums.
Not all. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I get a little weak and play myself, but almost very rarely, believe it or not.
What kind of music do you listen to when you're not making your own music?
So I was born in 78, and through grade school and whatnot, I was a huge Beatles fan, you know.
Yeah.
I was a big oldies fan in general, you know.
Yep.
And then Billy Joel, Bob Dylan. More recently, I've really been enjoying the Replacements. I'm a big fan of them. More recently, you know, as recently as 80s music is what I'm caught up to. And I'm a vinyl guy too. I have a lot of jazz records. I love Thelonious Monk specifically.
Sure. Sure.
I just can't stop buying Thelonious Monk albums.
I'm trying to get rid of all my vinyl. I'm trying to downsize my life.
Yeah, I did that once about 15 years ago. Now I'm repurchasing all these titles at much higher prices. It's awful.
I hope I don't have that same situation happen to me. I don't think I will. Do you ever make any of your records into vinyl?
Yeah, I've done 1, 2, 3, 4. I've done 4 vinyls. Usually I do about 200 copies, and I always end up selling them all over the course of, you know, 5+ years.
Right.
And I end up making like a very, you know, a little bit of a profit on it. So it's like, oh, this is great. Other people are paying for for there to be vinyl copies of my album, you know?
That's pretty sweet. So, what did you think your life was going to look like 20 years ago compared to what it actually has become?
I think basically I just thought like either it'll work or it won't, but I don't see me stopping basically.
But did you see yourself making all the Spotify? I mean, did you see yourself this being the thing is like making tons and tons of songs for Spotify and then making income as a result of, I guess you couldn't have seen Spotify coming 20, 30 years ago, but.
Right. Yeah. But I sort of had the, be undeniable approach to it, you know, like just make so much music and put so much stuff out there that eventually you're going to get noticed. And so that was the theory. I didn't know if it was going to work, but my basic idea was like I'd rather die trying, you know?
Persistence.
Yeah.
And where do you see, I mean, do you see yourself making these like 20 years from now? What do you see? Do you see this being a thing that you're going to do? Do you ever get sick of it, I guess, is the question?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always gotten sick of it. You know, there's always been, 6 hours into a marathon recording session where it hurts and every part of your body says stop, but forcing yourself to do a few more, you know? I've always gotten sick of it. And I always have the thing where I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed and do this, but then I force myself to. So it'll probably be more of that, you know. I would love to be able to like do shows that we sold enough tickets that like the band members could get paid, you know.
right.
Stuff like that. So hopefully things are way better than they were 5 years ago. So sure. I hope that 5 years from now they continue to be better. We're at the point where like we went to Philadelphia back in January or February, and like 120 people paid money to come see us, which, and we've done shows for like 15 people, you know? So it was like, oh, this feels like a bit of a turning point. People came and they knew the words to a lot of songs and they were singing and dancing and having fun. So that's a huge step in a good direction. And hopefully, there'll be more steps in the next 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are you working on right now?
Right now. So I have the 50 songs a month thing, but that's basically just name poop songs. I just go through another list of names.
Right.
But in addition to that, for this year, I told myself I would put out a No Jokes release every month. And so... Okay. I've done that every month since January. And I specifically said release. I didn't say album. So
sure.
It could be a single even. One collection only had 5 songs on it. But it's stuff, you know, where you can tell, you know, the words rhyme. So clearly, like, I wrote it ahead of time and stuff like that. And the instrumentation's a little bit more involved. But it's that whole thing, just setting goals, announcing it to the world, and forcing myself to live up to it, and sometimes feeling like, oh, this could have been better. But again, no time for that. There's more to do. Like the whole like newspaper mentality, you know, like there's a deadline for the article. You got to just write it and the first edition's coming out.
But I mean, you've only got yourself to be responsible for. That's the tricky part in my world, is that I've only got the only accountability is coming from me. Right. As opposed to a newspaper in which the accountability is coming from whoever. Right.
Right. I mean, I made a movie called Local Legends that you'd probably enjoy. But in it, it's like a Woody Allen movie depicting my life as me. Like I play myself.
Okay.
But in it, I talk about that specifically. And then I have scenes where it's me, the artist on one side of the table, and then it's me, the slicked back boss, on the other side of the table. Oh. And the boss is just yelling at the artist constantly and telling him to be more productive.
Very like Bergman, you know, like a...
Yes, I don't get compared to Bergman very often, but
you
I like it.
You got
it. I like it. Yeah.
Take it. Run with it. what do you do when you're not making, like, when you're doing not doing all the media? I know you got like two podcasts or something. You've got the films. You got the music. All that. You got the two kids. You got all that. What does Matt Farley do to, I don't know, relax? Yeah. To
super long walks. Like on Sunday.
Same. Yeah.
Sunday I walked 19 miles.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Yes. Out of control. So I did 4 miles with the wife and kids. And then we did a loop that got back to the house. And then I said, all right, folks, I'll see you around 11 o'clock tonight. And then I just did a much, much bigger loop that evening. I try to do 2 15-milers per week.
Wow.
It doesn't always happen, but here I am telling you about it so that later this week when I got to do my next 15-miler,
you're gonna do it.
I'll be
right.
Like, I told Jeff that I would.
And I'll call you and make sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a big walker. And then... I'm the lead caregiver with the kids 4 days a week. My wife right. works at a dental laboratory. So
okay.
in the school year, I'm sitting down at the school table with them and teaching them. And then it's school's over for us for summertime. So it's just basically
nonstop
going out and having adventures.
Right.
We'll go, like we went to Boston yesterday. We got there about 1 p.m. and we walked 7 miles around Boston and then went to the Red Sox game before coming home. So it was a great day. And I, you know, I all that stuff. I want to wring every bit of fun and joy and experience out of life, all that junk.
Sure. I like that. What is your, I guess, overarching philosophy of life in a way? I mean, I think we've gotten a feel for it in what you've already said, but I'm just curious if you've got...
Yeah. Yeah. For me, you know, and Tom and I used to, Tom Scalzo from our band, one of our bands is called Moe's Haven, but in it we had a song called Treatise on Moturnism. And like Moturn is just like the word for like everything I do. I call my business Moturn Media. It's just a made up word, but
right.
it's been defined as just like, embracing excessive creativity, you know, and that like, if you're not creating something, you're wasting your time. But it can be creating a work of art, but also it can be just creating a great day out in the city of Boston, you know. But just like, Kerouac, you know,
yeah,
on the road stuff. Those guys live in to the fullest. You know, it's funny though. I read about Kerouac a lot
miserable alcoholic.
Yeah. Even the book itself, On the Road, is like, these guys are a bunch of deadbeats, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I'd like to tweak that philosophy a little bit and just like have everyone be a little bit more responsible, right. you know? And
on the road.
Yeah. Like I've been on the road and it didn't involve like abandoning, you know, pregnant women and stuff. You know?
Right,
like,
right. Well, different times, you know, what are you going to do?
It's amazing, but people still like enjoy reading that, you know? So, My philosophy, I'm more of a fuddy-duddy philosophically than most of the people who are celebrated for their lust for life, you know?
Yeah, but you seem like a generally happy human.
Yeah, what is a fuddy-duddy, actually?
That's a good question. What is fuddy-duddy? I mean, I have my idea of what a fuddy-duddy means, but I kind
I
of
thought like
let
a fuddy-duddy is like a person who's kind of like a stickler about doing the right thing.
Like, oh.
Yeah, I'm wagging my finger. Like, I'm out there living life the best I can whilst
Well, also wagging. Pointing fingers at Jack Kerouac for being a degenerate. Right. Well, I mean, we all have to compare ourselves to something.
Yeah, well,
right?
While I'm at it, I should tell you, never had a sip of alcohol my entire life.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, how about that?
No drugs or anything?
Nothing.
Wow.
Barely a Tylenol.
Well, maybe once the kids go to college, you'd get a little weed and see where the music goes, because I think that suddenly Matt's music got very weird.
No, and I don't buy it. Like, even people are always like, oh, the Beatles were, like, so drugged out, you know, they say. But then you watch the Let It Be or the Get Back doco, you know, and it's like, no, these guys were, you know, they were like showing up at 10 in the morning and just being like well, jolly lads going to work.
Lennon was showing up all fucked up with Yoko Ono. I mean, if we saw the same one, I was seeing Lennon show up like late and clearly fucked up on heroin.
I didn't. Maybe my fuddy-duddiness makes me naive.
Oh, maybe you didn't see it. Yeah. No, I think that John Lennon was super fucked up in that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For the most part, though, I just think it's like, it's the same thing with Kerouac. It's like, oh, wow, these cool guys are like altering their brain. It's just like, yeah, boring. Like, if you can't be creative without altering your brain, then I don't think you're working hard enough. But then again, the Beatles are way more successful than me.
Right. So who's to say?
I am.
Fuddy-duddy. I've got to write a song now, Fuddy-duddy. I think it's a great song name. I think that's...
Yeah, no, you can. Yeah, if you... Yeah, I haven't done a specific Fuddy-duddy song, but yeah, you're right.
Is there any reason why you've never touched? Is it like a religious or just never... Parents didn't, you know, or...
Yeah, well, parents didn't, but it was never like any kind of lecturing or anything. It just wasn't a thing in the house.
Huh.
And... I don't, it just feels like cheat, you know, as you can probably tell, I'm not like not a big easy way out kind of guy. And it just feels like cheating to me, sort of.
I'm not
like,
even talking about even in general creativity. I'm just talking about in general, like, you know.
Oh, no, I mean for life. Like,
if, I see what you mean.
It's
like, fair enough.
Oh, you can take this magic drink and feel better. It's like, yeah, I'd rather walk 19 miles.
All right. Well, yeah, fair enough. Whatever works, right? Whatever works. You could sell that.
You know, or like sleeping pills, too. You know, it's like. Like you have trouble sleeping, you could take a pill or you could just like exhaust yourself, you know? I'd rather exhaust myself.
It's true. Although I do find that like on a long line, if I keep doing exercise every day, it doesn't always, the sleep will slowly go away with the exercise.
Like you
that
build
I do.
Up a tolerance to the exercise. Yeah.
Something like
I hear
that.
You. Yeah. Or sometimes, because I'd usually do these walks at night, so heart's pounding, and I lay in bed, and it's just like, I have to take 90 minutes to cool off from the walk.
Well, night walks are also better than day walks, for sure, in my opinion. Yeah.
Anytime I see another pedestrian, I always go to the other side, because I don't want to frighten them.
And I feel like that's a post-COVID thing, because I see people doing that all the time when I walk around in my neighborhood, people crossing the street. And like, I don't feel like I saw that pre-COVID, but maybe not. Maybe I just
I was doing it. And it's always just been like, it's been after dark, specifically after dark. I just don't want to frighten anybody, you know?
Oh, I see.
Because I'm so muscular too, you know?
Right. Intimidating. Right. I've seen the pictures. Yeah. I always have my headphones in when I'm walking. And like, I often wish that I knew my neighbors better, but yet I'm walking around with headphones on and then they see me and we can't converse because I can't hear them.
I know.
So I feel bad, you know. I want to engage with the world, but also I want to be listening to whatever I want to listen to in order
to walk. Podcast, for instance.
Right, for sure. Over and over. This is why I'm making it.
Well, I have an idea. Do you want to hear it?
I would love to hear it. Yeah.
Okay. This is a work in progress, but even odd days. Every month, okay? One day a month. So in January, because it's the first month, that's an odd number, okay? People live in a house that's odd, an odd number. You know, if you live on like number 131 Main Street.
Yeah.
At a certain time that's decided upon, you have to hang out in front of your house for an hour or two, okay? Everyone who lives in the even numbered houses has to go on a neighborhood walk, okay?
All right.
Then in February, we switch it up.
And I hear what you're saying.
And it's just kind of a little bit of forced community. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. I think you're going to have trouble in the winter in some of the northern states because it's cold. So maybe just like a 6-7-8 month period, you could do it
Let's
for some.
Go April through November. April, right. November.
Some group's going to feel like they got shafted because they've had to walk more often, unless you do 8 months. You have to do 8 exact months because otherwise some group is going to be like, well, I had to walk more than...
In Florida, it can be the opposite. In the super hot time of the year, they'll take that time off, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I'm all for it because I really do feel like community is a thing that we've lost in the last 5 to 10 years in a really unfortunate way. But I feel like you'd have a difficult time getting people to do it.
I do too. Yeah.
You'd have one group of people walking around doing it, looking for the other group of people that are standing outside. Right.
Yes. Right. I know. Right. But everything starts small.
It's true. You know? It's true.
But it came from Halloween. Trick or treating, I think, is where the idea came from.
True. Yeah. That's how you meet people.
I was like, going around with the kids, and I'm like, this is the only time I talk to people in the neighborhood.
Right, right.
And I love it. You know, like there was one year we did it, the Patriots were playing while we were trick-or-treating. So we'd knock on the door, I'd see someone was watching. I'm like, how's the game going? You know, what's the score? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we just need something to talk about, or just like a reason to break the ice. On the flip side, you know, you get too close with people. It's like that Seinfeld episode where they have the name tags and then they're like kissing hello. And then they all end up hating Jerry because he refuses to hug or something. It's great.
Yeah. You want to be close to your neighbors, but not too close.
Yeah.
There's a line. Yeah. Boundaries are important.
We're going to have a lot of stipulations in this. Yeah,
What are you going to call it? You got a name for it? Or just even odds?
Even odds. Yeah, it's even odds.
Something a little more catchy than that, just to get people to do it. You might need to write a song to promote it. Actually,
take it. I mean, I'm putting it out there. You know, I'm starting it, but you can take it. You can run with it. You know, if you it's yours.
It could be a whole. It could be a worldwide thing. Really, it could blow.
Yeah,
up.
And there can be. That's okay. That's another thing. I love local variations on things. Like I say aunt, my aunt, Erin.
Huh.
You probably say aunt, right?
I sure do, yeah. I say aunt, yeah.
And I love that. And I'm a big fan of like anything that's local. Another thing, coffee milk. You ever have coffee milk?
I don't even know what that is.
See? And I love that.
What is it?
It is honestly the official state drink of Rhode Island. Like the people in charge, the politicians actually voted on this to recognize coffee milk as the state drink. And I went to college in Providence, Rhode Island. So that's where I really became addicted to it. But it's just like flavored milk, but it's coffee flavored milk. So it's like chocolate milk, but coffee flavored. You can buy it in a bottle where they mix it ahead of time, or you can just buy the syrup at the grocery store and mix it in with your milk. But it's incredibly common in Rhode Island, less and less so as you leave Rhode Island. You know, I'm only an hour away from the Rhode Island line, so I can get coffee syrup in some grocery stores around here. But outside of New England, it's basically unheard of.
And there's no caffeine in it. It's just a coffee flavor.
Correct. Think of it as like coffee ice cream, just melted down and more milky.
I'm not crazy coffee flavor guy. I'm more coffee caffeine guy.
Yeah, well, you got to move to Rhode Island and or at least visit.
I'm told there's a lot of mafia in Rhode Island. Providence is a big mafia town, I think.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, but when I was in school there, the mayor is Buddy Cianci, who had been the mayor in the early 80s, went to jail for like beating up a guy and then got out of jail. It became mayor again.
Well, who was the Toronto mayor who was like film smoking crack, but then his brother became mayor, I think.
Right. Ford? Is Ford his name? Yeah. Yeah, something.
Literally filmed proudly smoking crack while being mayor.
Wild.
You know, Canada. People love Canada.
But anyway, I like that. I don't want everything to be the same everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's really become, and the world's really going that direction. It's really unfortunate.
In a bad way.
For sure. Because you used to be able to travel even to like Arizona and be like, oh, everything looks different here. But now you go to Arizona, it's fucking Walmart, Target, Chick-fil-A, whatever the fuck.
I hate these like three lanes on either side, you know, with these these roads. They're not highways. They're just these awful roads. Three lanes on either side. And then you turn into these gigantic plazas that have like six big box stores and then like a couple strip malls. And it's like,
and
there's no sidewalks. They don't even bother with sidewalks. They're like, of course you're not going to walk here. Ugh.
Yeah, no, I have issues with non-walkable cities for sure.
Me too. And so I'm super happy here in the Northeast, like because, you know, for America, this is like an old area, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there's not a lot of space for those giant roads. There's some of them, of course, but not a... Like whoever plans communities, the ones who do it now, they're like, more room for cars. We just need more, spread things out more. And I hate it.
I kind of hate driving, having to drive everywhere because I was in New York for 10 years. I moved here to Columbus 6 years ago. Yeah. And suddenly I had to get a car because you can't get around this fucking city without a car.
I know. And I resent it. And also just in terms of like your general well-being, like if you can walk to the post office and buy stamps or mail something and then walk home, you're like, like your primal brain is kind of being like, you did it, you accomplished a task, like a human person, and right, and it, right, it feels good.
Yeah, I walk to the post office sometimes, but the post office near me is really like, the woman who works there is like unhinged to a degree that really. The last time she was like on the phone with her like boss begging him to let her go because she had to go to the hospital and she could barely breathe. And she's still working, which was great. I felt bad even trying to have her do anything. I was like, this is just media mail. I'm just sending vinyl.
What a deal media mail is, by the way. My
God, it's like $5,
the
right?
Secret. It's the secret. They don't really stress it very much when you're mailing a box, but you just say those magic words, media mail, and suddenly the price goes down like 75%.
Well, I made the mistake. I was sending some magazines,
yeah,
old magazines, and I went to that same woman at the post office and I gave her the package. It was all sealed. I was like, this is media mail. It's just two magazines.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, but are there advertisements in the magazines? And I guess if there's advertisements in it, then it's not media mail. So I was like, yeah, okay. Then I'm like, all right, I'll send it somewhere else, which
and
I did.
Next,
I went to a different post office and just
you
lied.
You keep your mouth shut.
I lied by omission. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to say in general, the post office, incredibly reliable. A lot of people joke about the U.S. post office, but like, I don't think I've ever had anything that I've mailed that didn't get to where it was supposed to go.
Amazing.
And I think the prices are incredibly reasonable. Even just for a letter, you can mail a letter to Hawaii for, what is it, 60 cents? Oh,
it's
my
amazing.
God.
It's amazing.
And they do an incredible job. They bring it right to your door. And like, other people get mad that it doesn't make money, but it's like,
it's not supposed to make money.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, the roads don't make money either. I guess you could be tolling every road, you know, but like, it's part of what makes the country work.
Right.
They're incredible. God
bless them. No, it's really amazing. Yeah. I don't know how it works in other countries, but.
Yeah. Well, you hear horror stories, though, of things. They're just like, well, it might get there, it might not, you know. At other countries.
I did send a postcard from Iceland once, and it took about 2 months to get to America. But
it's funny to imagine where it was sitting all that time. Yeah.
Right, right. Or how it got lost somehow. But I mean, I imagine there's only a handful of Icelandic mailmen out there. There's not a lot of people in Iceland, so there's probably not that many mailmen or mail people, mail women, whatever.
They're busy.
Yeah, and they're probably cold, and it's especially in the winter because it's dark all the time, so that it's harder to...
It's hard to keep track of it all.
You gotta have flashlights. Yeah, flashlights. Yeah, gotta have flashlights. Usually ask people if they're happy, but you seem perfectly happy. So,
oh yeah, like it's frightening how happy I am. Yeah,
yeah. It's to me even it's not frightening. It's more like, damn it, how can I? I need some of that juice.
Being delusional is helpful, you know, just being so impressed with your own work, even though I know I have those moments where I feel a little bit of pain of sharing it with people. But in general, it's just like, this is good. Like, I do listen to my own music on my walks and I do think it's so good.
Yeah. I did the same with the first episode of my podcast. I was like, oh, this is actually good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do this Celtics podcast with my friend and we listen to it and we'll be like, we were good, huh? Yeah, we were good. You know? Meanwhile, we have like 27 listeners. It's crazy.
Right. Well, it's not about the expectation. It's about the process itself. That's
it really is. And it's like a guy I've known since I was in second grade. And it's just like a fun thing to be doing together.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly the podcast. I've been thinking about doing this for years. And it's more a reason to just... Like, I'll find people that I know in town, like yoga teacher that I like, reach out on Instagram and be like, hey, you want to be on the podcast? And we talk, sit down and talk for 2 hours. And it's like, we have a great conversation. And by the end, they're like, oh, this was great. I haven't talked to somebody for this long of a time for a long time. Which
And now you have a great connection with them from that point forward, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, if anything, making films has taught me, it's that you can't expect anything to come out of it. You have to enjoy doing it on its own. Ultimately you'll likely be disappointed by
movie making is just one catastrophe.
It really is. It's very hard. I haven't made anything for years because it's difficult to do.
I know, but even like for professionals too, that's the best part about it is like the problems I encounter as like a zero budget filmmaker, just on a different scale, but it's really a lot of the same problems that the biggest filmmakers are dealing with. They have the weather isn't cooperating, or XYZ, but it's a lot of the same just basic stuff and always feeling like you're behind, you know?
Right. But you've got limitations set on you because of budgetary reasons. And I think that's actually one of the best things that made my filmmaking better was having limitations, being like, we have $500. What can we make for this? Yeah. Or whatever it is. Because if you have $10 million, I can only imagine how my brain would explode. Right.
Too many options. Yeah. Too many options and whatnot. Yeah. You zero it in and it makes it easier to make a decision when you have no other choice.
Right. It's like the way they sell toothpaste. You know, they try to confuse you with the abundance of choice. If you go toothpaste style and look at how many choices there are. There's like tartar control with whitening, tartar control with gum, all three each individually. And you get like paralyzed by the abundance of choice. It's too many.
Yeah.
I lived in Korea years ago. There were two toothpastes, red and white. It was great. I used red.
Oh, it's same thing with streaming. If you're on Netflix, you can spend whole night just flipping.
Drives me crazy.
Just flipping through the options. And then you pick a movie, and if you don't love it, six minutes in, you go back to flipping. Whereas back when you used to rent a video, you're like, you're stuck with, this is your movie. This is the one you're watching.
And you're going to enjoy it. Well, maybe you'll have two.
Yeah, perusing the aisles, so much fun. Like
it was
because, like I said about the post office, same thing. It's like you got to go on your journey. You know, you got to get out there. You feel like a hunter.
Yeah. Too many choices. How could we complain about this? When we were younger, all we did was complain that we didn't have. All we wanted was more, and now they gave us everything.
I know. Yeah, right? I know. Life is great. I mean, the fact that we have access to basically every song ever recorded, you know, on streaming sites. And a lot of people will talk about how streaming sites are bad for artists. They don't pay artists enough. And of course, I would not complain if they paid higher rates. But on the flip side, as a consumer, you can't beat the deal for the price of like one CD a month.
Dude, the amount of money
you can
I
listen
spend
to
on
anything.
CDs. Yeah. How much money do you spend? I mean, so much money on CDs. Like, and nothing. There's all my mom's attic now.
Right. I used to spend, you know, like 25 years ago, I'd spend $45
insane.
A month on CDs, you know? So
but
now for a third of that in 2025 money, I have everything.
And then, but back then you also cherished the album. You have the money to buy three albums and you would listen to those over
You'd
and over.
You'd live with them. You had to. Yeah.
Which, you know, double-sided coin, really.
Yeah. But on the flip side, I've found a lot more music since streaming came because it's essentially free to press play and give something a try, you know, versus when you would have to just buy a CD because you read a review of it, you know.
Are you worried about AI? Because I know that I heard a podcast the other day was talking about how there's now like songs on like mood playlists on Spotify that are entirely AI created that you wouldn't even know. They're just like, you know, the lo-fi beats kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely envision that kind of getting in the way of people discovering me. I definitely don't. I'm not interested in it personally.
Right.
But I don't want to go too far in either direction, though, because it's like it's a technological thing. And I mean, without technology, we wouldn't have streaming, which is something that I like. We wouldn't have synthesizers, you know, so like my keyboard is able to create all these noises that I can't play violin, but I can make my keyboard sound like a violin. Is that cheating? You know, and to some degree it is. And imagine like folk singers from the 1420s, they would be like, it's not fair.
Yeah, they'd be angry. Yeah.
It's not fair that you can record yourself and send it out and distribute it into the world. So, but in general, it doesn't, in the same way, like I'm not a fan of like a band that pre-records stuff that they play along with live.
Yeah.
And whatever, some people do it and some people don't care and blah, blah, blah. But for me, it's like, I want to see a band trying to, you know, capture something in real time on stage. That's what I'm personally looking for. And
I think
there'll always be enough people looking for that kind of thing to keep the humanity in art.
Yeah,
I would think.
I tend to agree. I mean, I have a friend that we talk about how filmmaking is going to change entirely with AI at a certain point, where you'll be able to make entire movies basically just by putting something into an AI. But I still think it's like, I don't know what they call it, but where you'll still be able to tell they're not humans, and it'll still be this human connection that you're missing. Because right. I still think people are going to still want to watch human beings on a screen performing, as opposed
yeah.
to
and well, the same thing with you. When you give people exactly what they want, they're not. It's like, so if you say like, I want a movie where I'm the hero who, you know, runs around with a dog and blah blah blah, right. and they give it, you're going to be bored. Versus you hear that some people got together and made a movie, you're like, ooh, I want to see that.
Right, right, right. True.
I mean, that's my view. And I don't know. I mean, NFTs were like the future. Remember at one point,
right,
NFTs
sure
were the future? And that was not that long ago. That was like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, although I think AI is in a different bucket to a degree than NFTs. I feel like AI is not going to go away. I think it'll change, but it's not going to go away. And it's going to cure disease too. Like, it's going to invent drugs and cure diseases. So like, there's going to be good and bad with all these technologies, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? I was saying to my friend, like, in 50 years, this house will probably still be here. And if you look out the window, it'll probably look basically the same as it does now.
Yeah.
And so whatever's happening, a lot of it is just on the internet, you know, also. And it's good to remember that.
That's true. Yeah. I imagine you'll see like a drone or two delivering a package at some point, but that's probably the only real change.
And maybe, I don't know. When I was a kid, people were telling me, you just wait, there'll be people in jetpacks flying all around.
Flying cars was the big one when I was a kid.
I'm still waiting.
No flying cars. Yeah. I did ride in one of the self-driving cars in San Francisco, and that was interesting. Like the taxis that drive themselves, that was wild. Yeah.
That's something. I'm not good at letting go. I don't like being a passenger, period. Forget about a robot's passenger. Yeah.
Right. That'd be a good scene for a movie, though, to have you in a robot taxi knowing you're. Yeah. Throwing it out there. You can call it Fuddy Duddy. Actually, I think I'm going to call this podcast Fuddy Duddy. I think that's got to be the name of the podcast.
Yeah. I'm a total Fuddy. And that's the thing. Like, sometimes people will hear about me and be like, I'd like to hang out with him. And I'm like, nah, Frank, actually, you wouldn't. You know, I don't even really hang out with people. I just like make movies or music with people. A friend, maybe like, we want to watch the game together. And I'm like, watch the game together? What are you talking about? Like, you mean just sit and watch the game? Like, I don't understand, you know? So I'm not that kind of like fun hangout friend.
I get it. I have a lot of fun hangout friends, but also I do wish I had when I left New York, I left my friends that I would make things with behind. So it's like, you know, I would like to have a group that I could actually create with.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of making a movie too, like, if you got people around, and especially the first time, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. They'll give you a day and a half. You know, if you write a script that requires no more than a couple days out of each actor, you could make something weird and wacky and unexpected, you know, because it's like, you know what you're going to get from a trained actor. You don't know what you're going to get from your friend who's an accountant and is doing you a favor on the weekend. So
you might get magic too. You might get gold.
Yeah. You can. And I mean, that's what people seem to like our movies for, just seeing, you know, my former coworkers attempting to act. It's delightful.
I love that idea. I like using average people who aren't necessarily actors in films, especially like improvisational ones, which is what I usually do. They can do that. Just act like yourself. Just do your thing. And
yeah,
you know,
people acting like themselves in front of a camera is a very unique thing to watch.
Yeah, a lot of times. Some people do it. Some people are like, just pretend the camera's not there. People can't pretend.
No, we don't. Yeah, we're not improvisational at all. We have lines written out, and people really spit them back out almost phonetically, you know, to the point where they speak English, but they are not thinking of the meaning of any of the words they're saying. They're just we say, all right. And here's another thing, aspiring filmmakers out there. Oftentimes you'll say "and action," and the person will be so excited to deliver their line that they'll start saying it before you've finished saying "action." You know? And so our trick is, I'll say, when I give you thumbs up, deliver the line, because you need that little bit of silence before they start talking.
Yeah. Working with non-professional actors, tips.
Yeah. I know so many people out there who need that.
For sure. Anyway, Matt, last questions I usually ask people is, because I was I was told that you need to have like a last podcast question, and I couldn't.
Smart. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think happens when you die?
Oh, it's heavy.
And have you written a song about it?
No, I have no, yeah, I have no idea. You know, in fact, I have a song called What Does Life Even Mean? And in the line, it's only one line to the song. It's what does life even mean? And who am I to say it should have meaning? You know, so it's basically just like, you know what? I'm going to wash my hands of all this. I'm going to try to live the life that I feel I should be living and be as good a person as I can and let the chips fall where they may.
And make as many songs and films as you can in the meantime.
It's my duty.
Right. It's your role in this world. For what it's worth.
Well, this has been a delight.
Yeah, dude. Thank you for coming on so much, man. I really appreciate your time. And, you know, 1F Jeff the song, looking forward to it in, you know, a year, 10 years or whatever it is, the waiting list you said, 5, 10 years. But
you're on the list, right? Under Santana.
Oh, Santana. Just scratch that out and just like move it up a little bit, you know, just to.
Yeah, I'm going to move you ahead of Santana, all right? That's
all right, thank you, thank you. I got one up. That's great, great, one. Now I've only got 400 people above me or something, right? Right. Anyway, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. You're truly an inspiration to me, honestly, and I mean that. And I mean that. I don't know what else to say.
Thank you. Last
sure,
thing,
though, yeah.
Last thing. I know it's over, but you guys are on a bike ride, right, when you called me
we
before?
We were, yeah, last summer, yeah.
Okay. I'm a big bike rider, too. I did the whole East Coast after graduating college, from Massachusetts to Florida. Do you guys do that like once a year, or how's that work?
That was just a random, I don't know who planned it. Somebody was like, let's rent a place in Yellow Springs, which is like, I don't know, it's a 60, 70 miler out there. Okay. And yeah, just rented an Airbnb, stayed there overnight, and then biked back the next day.
Out and back. Oh, that's great. Yeah. 60, 70 miles each day? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That must have been a great adventure, huh?
Yeah, no, it was super fun, actually. Yeah. And weirdly enough, I was working in politics at the time, and halfway on the way back was when Biden dropped out of the election.
Oh, you always remember. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough. Yeah, we were. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You guys should do it again.
Yeah, I haven't been biking as much this year, but I should be biking more. Yeah.
Beauty of biking is when you get tired, you stop pedaling, but you're still moving, you know?
True. True. For that's a period of time.
Yeah. Right, yeah, but unless you can get those little, you can get those little moments where you get a little, catch your breath a little bit.
Right, and the study just came out like 2 years ago, or 2 weeks ago rather, that proves that biking actually does make you happier.
Oh yeah, and no pounding, no pounding on your joints, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
much more fun, makes you feel like a kid again.
All right, well, tell all those guys I said hi.
I will. Thanks again, Matt. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show.
And that was the one and only Matt Farley. If only there were more people like that in the world. I suppose if there were, we'd have more music than we knew what to do with, but I'll take it. You can learn more about Matt and experience more of his music and film work at moternmedia.com. That's MOTERNMEDIA.com. You can follow Matt on X at moternmedia. I've also put a link to his New York Times profile and his recent performance on NPR's World Cafe in the show notes. You should check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at 1FJeff. You can follow me on X at 1FJeff. You can email the podcast, and I hope you will, at 1FJeffPod@gmail.com. I've still yet to get a single email at that email address, so the first person who does email me at that address gets a prize. I'm not sure what kind of prize, but believe you me, it'll be a prize. As always, please like, rate, review, and subscribe. I say it every time, but I mean it every time. Please share with your friends. Please share with your enemies. Please share with people in your life that you're not entirely sure where they stand. We've all got some of those. And thank you to those of you who have reached out to me with such kind words about the podcast. I've had some really interesting conversations with people about the podcast, about the nature of connection, about giving people space. And that feels great. It feels great because I'm making this all by myself. So it's nice to get some feedback. You know, it's nice to get messages that say, your podcast is bringing me joy. Because what more can I ask? And finally, to end this episode, I feel like it's appropriate to play the song that Matt referenced when I asked him what he thinks happens when we die. It's called What Does Life Even Mean?
What does life even mean? What does life even mean? What does life even mean? And who am I to say it should have meaning? Oh, who am I to say it should have meaning? What does life even mean? What does life even mean? What does life even mean? And who am I to say it should have meaning? Oh, who am I to say it should have meaning? Who am I to say it should have meaning?
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Take care of yourselves.
Very good, Jeffrey.